just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now. Hey, I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now.
Develop these bars for the developing stars, whoa. Wrecked by the stars though, but they know just who they are. The knowledge is deep, man, cause college is bleak, man. Knees of the bees, man. Devy happy hour now. I trust him with everything. Every confidence giving me confidence. Sipping is hopping and really no stopping. I'll make you a champion, y'all put a sock in it. But this is life, bro. They're at it all night though. So you can just drive slow and get down with the Devy crew.
I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now. Hey, I wake up just to get down. I don't know if I can get them, but I got them right now.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you are listening, wherever you are listening. This is episode 64 of the Devy Happy Hour. My name is Skip Newton, at SkipNewton31 on Twitter. Thank you very much for listening in. We are super excited to bring you today's episode. There is a lot to talk about. We've got news. We've got a trade review that I want Matt's information on. We've got title game review. We're going to go over some rookies of the 2021 class. But before we do that, I got to get to the other part of the we, and that is from North Carolina, Matthew Jackson. I call him Obi-Wan. How you doing, buddy?
Man, it has been a roller coaster of emotions for me the last few days, man. I'm telling you, I'm doing good. I'm flying high off of that Browns playoff win. Baker Mayfield getting his first playoff win in his career, bringing the Browns a win that they've desperately wanted for the last however many years it is. So I'm flying high off of that win. I think I'm finally starting to recover from that big Ohio State blowout loss. That one hurt a little bit. That one took a few days. I had to take off social media for a few days. I said I can't check social media. I'm torn up about that loss, but man, I'm good. I'm excited to be back talking football, man. That's the one thing that makes all this worth it, man. We get to talk football together. So I'm excited to be back. I'm excited to talk some wide receivers with you tonight.
Man, I'm really glad you brought up the Cleveland game right away. I totally forgot in the intro, you know, you're a huge Baker Mayfield guy. And I always laughed whenever you're watching games and one of the announcers, you know, they'll say, oh, this is going to be one of those games that won or lost in the fourth quarter. And I'll even say it out loud, like, well, aren't all games won or lost in the fourth quarter? I mean, that's kind of how it's played. And clearly Pittsburgh heard that comment from me and said, No, we got this. We're going to lose this game in the first quarter.
not in the first quarter. We're going to lose this game in the first half of the first quarter. That's the worst start by an NFL team that I've seen in a long time.
I turned the game on late. My family and I had started a game. We were just going to, you know, throw this on, you know, in the background and kind of watch it. And I got to it a little late. I'm like, wait a minute, it's 14-0 already? This thing just started. So it's like, wow, what the hell happened?
I'll tell you what the problem was. Juju is too focused on his TikTok following and not focused enough on catching footballs.
Yet he still caught a lot of footballs. That'll be an interesting off-season thing to see. Where does Juju go? I still love Juju, so you definitely want to see where he ends up. But before we get into other stuff, I was curious – just kind of a get to know your podcast hosts. Are you a New Year's resolution guy? And if so, do you have any for this year?
I'm not typically a New Year's resolution guy. I'm smart enough to know myself and know that I set a New Year's resolution. I've tried it before, and like two months in, I'm like start of the new year, I'm like, I'm going to work out. Like, I'm going to get in shape. And then I go to the gym. I'm like, nah, this ain't for me. Like every single time. So I've given up on getting New Year's resolutions. I've got a few this year that are definitely focused more towards myself as a fantasy football analyst. So just trying to grow myself and grow the content that I provide and what I help people with. So as far as New Year's resolutions, that's about it for me this year.
It's interesting that you say that, both about the gym and about fantasy football, because I always kind of laugh back when I had a gym membership every year, and I got rid of it this year because of COVID, because I'm like, well, I'm not going to go back until things are really safe. But I was used to kind of groan to myself at, you know, early January, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's right, the gym's going to be super packed because all these people want to start working out again. But you just got to get through it, because by the end of January, it's all over and it's back to normal. But and again, I don't make the resolutions either, but I do have those goals for 2021 that are just like yours. They're both fantasy football analyst related. You know, I'm doing more writing, you know, with NFL Draft Bible, and I want to make my writing more, not only more informative, but more interesting to my readers, because I want to be one of those writers that people enjoy reading their articles and just, you know, enjoying the article itself as well as the content. And I know that's difficult, but that's my goal, is to make progress there. And then the second one is, as a podcast host, I want to be as engaging and entertaining as some of the other podcast hosts that I really enjoy listening to. I really like Trade Addicts Pod, for example, with Russ Fisher. I mean, Dynasty Outhouse. He's just a fun guy to be in leagues with and to listen to on podcasts, even if he's not talking about fantasy football. And JP Hurley is another one. The Dynasty Trade Calculator with Izzy Alkafas. Those are two of my favorite hosts, and I was lucky enough this week that JP was a guest on the Trade Addicts Pod, so I got to listen to both at the same time. So that was pretty sweet. But anyway, those are
it's two birds, one stone.
Yeah, my resolution. I certainly wish that from both a selfish standpoint and a podcast standpoint, and just in general standpoint, that school would get back to normal, so our third party Brian Shikoshis could return and be a part of this group, because of course Shaq is just so busy with teaching, he just doesn't have the time right now. But as we say all the time, Shaq, we miss you and we love you and we got your back, so it's good to at least chat with you, you know, through text and Twitter. But in the news, you know, we're getting, you know, the season's over, we declare the national championship, we'll talk about that, but we've got the draft declaration deadline coming up on Monday. So this is when players have to officially declare for the NFL draft. It's always nice to reach that point, because then you know who's in and who's out. Of course, now the NFL came out with an announcement that if you're a senior, I think they extended it to at least the end of February, where they can – something about they're not – they're assuming that they're in like they normally would, but they have to specifically say if they're out or something like that. It was, I remember reading it and being like, oh my God, could anything be more confusing than what they're doing? So it's like, we're not going to have any idea who's coming back and who's not, because all these seniors can return to school with an extra year of eligibility. So it's just kind of a nightmare. So we'll do the best to pass things on for key Devy players that we hear about. A few that I've read that are coming back. You've got quarterback Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati. So here was a guy that was creeping up, I think, people's lists. He was getting into that conversation, not for tier one, tier two, or I would even say tier three, maybe tier three though, because you start getting down to Trask and Mac Jones. That's where you start to hear the name, you know, I'd take Desmond Ridder over both those guys. So possibly late first round, but now that all doesn't matter, he's going to go back. You know, what do you think about Ridder heading back to school for one more year?
So initially I thought this was a good idea for him. I mean, you look at this draft and what have we been hyping up all year? It's you have at least five guys, if not possibly six, that could go in the first round of the NFL draft. And I know that's unprecedented. Like, we don't see that all that often, but it was a real scenario that we were talking about for a while now. And you know, it's funny how you mentioned Mac Jones. You know, I don't think many people were going to want to take Desmond Ridder after that Mac Jones blow-up game. So he definitely improved his stock that we'll talk about later. But when you look at a guy like Desmond Ridder, I mean, I like it for him initially, because that class was so loaded that, I mean, he was looking at best maybe round two draft capital, if not creeping into the third round. But then I started to think of it more, and next year, I mean, we're not slim at quarterback next year either. I mean, you got guys like Sam Howell, you got Keaton Slovis, you got my Oklahoma guy and Spencer Rattler next year. So when you add Desmond Ridder to that group, I mean, next year's quarterback group is looking just as good as this year's is. So initially I liked it for him, but I mean, hopefully he can improve his stock and go in the first round next year. That's ultimately the goal. But I don't know if he's going to improve his stock much because next year is just as loaded as this year is.
Yeah, I think I'm with your initial reaction. I think for him, I like that he went back. I think while there is the potential for next year to be just as good at quarterback as there was this year, I think there's just generally more question marks as far as, you know, like we have no idea right now who the 101 would be next year based on what we've seen. I mean, it could be any of those guys you mentioned, whereas for the last 2 years, we knew it was Trevor Lawrence. So that I think just it diminished people's feelings on how good like Fields is, because Fields is extremely talented. I mean, when they came into college, they were literally at the same level. So because Lawrence is that great of a prospect, people tend to find more flaws, I think, in Justin Fields than are there. I mean, there are some. Every quarterback has flaws, but he's really good too. So, you know, those top two are so good. Whereas next year, it's a little more of, you know, depending on what kind of flavor of quarterback you like. So I think this is a good move. I certainly don't think he's going to hurt himself unless he absolutely goes like into the tank. I don't think that's likely with his style of play.
Yeah. I think it helps him a lot. I mean, he's definitely the most athletic quarterback out of this bunch. I mean, I don't think there's any denying his athletic ability on the football field. I do see some accuracy and some footwork issues with him whenever he's planting his foot and driving the ball downfield. I mean, he's not the most accurate quarterback in this class, so I think he can definitely improve at that aspect and raise his draft stock when it comes to that.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, some other guys coming back, all at running back. We've got Max Borgi from Washington State, who definitely had a down year. I see this as a great decision by Max, because he was coming off a really good 2019 season. We've kind of picked that apart in previous podcasts where the reception total was high, but the yards wasn't so good. You know, we'd like to see more from him, and we didn't get to see that this year with a shortened season. So I like that he came back for his stock. Plus, I don't think the running back class is deep at all next year, so that helps. I'm going to go through all three, and then you could comment. Zamir White from Georgia was a surprise to me. I actually don't like this decision, even though the running back class is deeper in 2020. When a guy's coming off an injury like that, I think as soon as you show that, hey, I can do this, I am absolutely ready to handle the physicality again, and I can make all the moves that I was making, and like you're indicating, you know, with your hands, it's two knee injuries. Man, as soon as you're ready, you got to go. You don't spend any more time as an amateur not getting paid than you should. I mean, your career is on a shortened timeline as it is. I don't like that decision at all. And then my guy, Muhammad Ibrahim, Minnesota, in a surprise decision coming back, which, you know, as a Gopher fan, row the boat. I love it. I don't know what his NFL draft stock would have been. I think he's still a day three guy, but if he has another season next year, like he did this year, where, I mean, he had a stretch of like four straight games of 200 yards, you know, he might slip into the round three. So I think it's a good decision from him, taking away my Gopher fandom. What are your thoughts on these three guys?
So, I mean, you hit the nail on the head when it came to Max Borgi. You know, he was a guy that, We had some issues with his pass catching ability, not his ability to catch passes, but his ability to be explosive and elusive in the open field after he's caught the passes. And there are some serious question marks about his ability to be a runner between the tackles. And he didn't have much time this season to prove any of those doubts wrong. So I love that move for him. Hopefully his stock has crashed back down to earth where he's not going as high as he used to go. So maybe I can foresee myself possibly getting some Max Borgi shares. I don't know. I still don't like it, but we'll end up seeing. Zamir White is one that has confused the mess out of me, man. I'm telling you. When I was holding up two fingers, and you got what I was saying. I mean, he's had two ACL tears. I mean, when you look at the running back position, and I know medical advances has made ACL tears not as scary as they used to be in years past. With that being said, I look at a guy like Todd Gurley, right, who has had some knee issues and some ACL issues, some degenerative knee issues. And, you know, after a rookie contract for a running back, that's when you want to start getting out from under these guys. And we saw that with Todd Gurley. He got paid. He had one more good year, and then he's not a guy that I'm interested in having any shares of right now. So when you look at a guy like Zamir White, who's had the two ACL tears, he's back to his form, and he looked explosive this season. He looked agile. He looked like a physical running back. But when you play the style of running that Zamir White does, I'm worried about his ability to hold up. I mean, I'm a little confused why when you have the ability to make money, you don't go out and make money. Why would you want to risk it for another year? But if this is his decision that he wants to make, I'm going to respect his decision. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I was a little confused. It doesn't make sense to me, but it is what it is, I guess. When it comes to Muhammad Aubrey, I mean, he was a guy that I was targeting in round three of my rookie drafts. So I like the decision for him. You know, you mentioned how next year is a weak running back class, and you're absolutely right. I love the decision for him to come back and possibly improve his stock. I'm a little hurt. I don't like it for me as a fantasy football owner who was looking at drafting Muhammad Aubrey everywhere because I fell in love with his tape. You know, I'm going to say it for you, Skip. You ready? Row the boat.
That's right.
So I'm going to say it for you one time. You can record that. You can take that snippet out of this podcast.
Yeah,
you can
play that over and over again for you. I like that.
So, yeah, I like it for him. So hopefully he can improve his draft stock. I wish I could have him on my team 1 year earlier.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, varying decisions that guys will make and the reasons why, but you know, it is what it is. We can only say what we think we would have done. The last one is tight end Charlie Kohler, Iowa State. This one I also think is a smart decision by him. Again, getting into the fact that tight ends are extremely deep in the 2021 rookie class, and they're not deep at all next year. So he's putting himself, if he plays exactly like he's played these last 2 years, I think he's putting himself in a great position to be one of the top tight ends of next year's class. And that's a smart move. You know, tight ends are, it's a physical position. You are at risk of injury, but I still think that was a good decision for Kohler. What do you think about him?
I think that we need to stop agreeing so much. This podcast is going to get really boring if we just agree all the time.
Maybe we'll fix that in a little bit.
So yeah, when it comes to Charlie Kohler, I love this decision for him. I mean, when you look at that draft class, at this draft class of tight ends, I mean, you had three guys that just their stock was so high that I wasn't taking Charlie Kohler out of, you know, any of those three guys. I mean, that's just plain and simple. So when you look at his decision to come back, I love that for him for sure. Next year's class is super, super weak. I mean, you've got one guy, I think, that we're interested in taking over him. And I'm trying to think of the name. I can't.
But we got Jalen Weidermeyer.
Jalen Weidermeyer. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of. I was blanking on his name. But yeah, I mean, you've got one.
Yeah, the Alabama guy, right? Who are we? Yeah. Jaleel Billingsley. Talked about.
So, I mean, you got two guys that we're looking at in that tight end class. And if we're being honest, like, I like Charlie Kohler over both of those guys. So, I mean, he's playing himself into possibly being the first tight end taken in next year's draft, where if he came out this year, he's at best tight end four coming off the board. So I love that decision for him.
Yeah, we definitely see eye to eye there. And then, of course, the very active transfer portal. I mean, guys are transferring left and right. It's almost impossible to keep up with all this stuff. But just a few names, again, I pulled out from this week. Running back Texas, Keontae Ingram, you know, one of my guys from before the season, has entered into the transfer portal. So that just happened, I think, today I saw the news. So we don't know where he's going yet, but this doesn't surprise me. Of course, the freshman phenom, Bijan Robinson, absolutely took over that job, and he is the man there. And then another running back, Ty Chandler, is transferring from Tennessee to UNC, so North Carolina. Of course, a ton of opportunity at North Carolina with Williams leaving. We've got that other guy whose, of course, name is going to escape me because the pressure's on, Michael Carter, leaving as well. So two guys that were both highly productive, both are going to be drafted in the NFL. And I'm actually gonna write an article about this over the weekend. There isn't much left as far as guys that are that are shoo-ins to take the job. So he has every opportunity in the world to finish his career, finally maybe being the guy and getting the opportunity. He's had good numbers in split roles with Tennessee, but never had that full opportunity, I think, to be the main man. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens here. I mean, he's a 4-star prospect, so he's got talent. What do you think about Ty Chandler going to North Carolina?
I love that get for my Tar Heels. When you look at it, I mean, they're losing 2,400 yards rushing between Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. They're losing 28 touchdowns rushing the ball, and they're also losing over 500 yards receiving through the air. So I mean, there's so much production vacated that, I mean, Ty Chandler, when you look at his ability to be a productive running back, I mean, the sky's the limit for this kid, because I think the next leading rusher on this team was Sam Howell with 146 rushing yards. So I mean, when you look at who's going to come in and take this role, I mean, no one outside of, you know, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter had anything to do with rushing the ball this season. And when you look at what Ty Chandler did, splitting that backfield with Eric Gray, I mean, he runs the ball well. He's also a very underrated pass catcher, in my opinion. And that's what Carolina loves to do. Sam Howell loves to throw the ball to his running backs and check it down. So when he's not airing the ball down the field, he loves to check the ball down to his running backs. So I love the opportunity this provides for Ty Chandler. He immediately, for me, comes in to this backfield as the lead back. And I think he could be a guy we're talking about next year who has raised his stock exponentially by the end of next year.
So an interesting theory, you could, you know, grab Chandler as a sleeper at the end of your Devy drafts, because odds are he's available. I mean, he hasn't stood out, and just hope that he absolutely explodes in that North Carolina system, and then you could sell him off and get you know, a nice little return on your investment. We're both in the camp that the returning rushing leader Sam Howell is not going to become a rushing quarterback next year, so he's not going to eat up those yards. And they do have a freshman coming in, Kamaro Edmonds, I believe, is a 4-star prospect. So, you know, we're going to talk more about him as we get into our freshman analysis at different positions. But, you know, I think worst case scenario is he's a 50-50 guy in an offense that has already proven that it can have two very productive backs, even though they're splitting time 50-50. So, yeah, this is a complete huge opportunity for Chandler. We both love that. And then the last one, and I did put out an article on this one, wide receiver from Oklahoma, Charleston Rambo, best name in college sports, going to Miami. So an interesting switch there. Miami's got a couple of guys coming back that he'll have to contend with. They've got quite a few 4-star wide receiver, you know, freshmen coming in this latest class signed on National Signing Day. And probably receiving balls from Derek King. I'm assuming that the ACL injury he suffered in the bowl game is going to be, you know, fully healed. He's expected to play in the fall, because, like you said, you know, ACL injuries just aren't what they used to be. But an interesting move. My guess is, you know, I'm interested to see what you think, but I think he's doing this because Marvin Mims, the freshman at Oklahoma, turned out to be so good. Theo Weiss is still there that he knew he was third fiddle. And he wanted to go somewhere where he could be possibly the number one guy. I don't understand any other reason to leave when clearly he's in my opinion, he's clearly taking a step down at quarterback.
You know, Charleston Rambo is probably part of the all-name team, but that's about all he does for me. I mean, when you look at his ability as a receiver, he's definitely a take the top off the defense type of guy. But when it comes to anything more than that, there's just not much that I'm interested in when it comes to Charleston Rambo. I mean, he's a slower John Ross to me. I mean, when it comes to Devy guys, he's not somebody that I really am targeting all that much in my drafts. And I mean, you're absolutely right. Marvin Mims popped this year. He might have been third fiddle, but he could have possibly been fourth fiddle with Jaden Hazelwood coming back to that team next year as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the competition was so big for that team. I mean, he wasn't going to stand out. He's not somebody that even stands out to me in Miami now. He's more of a wait and see, possibly a void guy for me right now.
Yep, I would agree. He can make some big plays, but he doesn't show enough to make him somebody that you want to draft on your Debbie squad, unless you're in super deep leagues.
He doesn't show me any NFL translatable skills that's going to make me go, yep, that guy's going to succeed at the next level. I mean, that's just not his game. He's one of those guys that's a great college receiver, not a great NFL receiver in my mind.
Yep. All right, so I want to get your opinion on a trade. Of course, this is my trade that I made in a league, so I'm not going to tell you exactly what side I'm on. But it is a 12-team league, obviously, Devi. It's super flex, two tight end. So you have to start two tight ends, but not tight end premium. It is a full PPR. We have a three-round rookie draft. We have a three-round Devi draft, so they're two separate drafts. And this is year three coming in. So just to give you an idea of you know how many players are gone, you're basically talking 36 Devi players the first year, 36 Devi players the second year, and then now we're going into year three. And last year, maybe three incoming freshmen were drafted. We had Uyunglele, we had Bryce Young, and then I think one of the freshman wide receivers was taken. But you know, mostly we're steering clear of freshmen because, you know, you got to hold on to them for 3 years. So just to give you an idea of, you know, the talent that's available. Tyreek Hill was traded for Ryan Tannehill, Breece Hall, many people's top running back in the 2022 class, and then this year's Devi pick 3.03, so the 303. So what do you think of that move?
So for me, this is an easy one. I hope you're not on the side that I'm getting ready to bash. but for me, I'm taking Tyreek Hill here pretty much all day. I mean, when you look at Hill, I mean, he's one of those just freak athletes. I mean, they don't call him Tyreek the Freak for nothing, right? So, I mean, he's a game breaker. He's a guy that has the ability to go out in the air and get you a 50-point game several times through the season. I mean, he's not a talent that you see coming to the league very often. And when you look at Ryan Tannehill, while he's been a serviceable quarterback in Superflex leagues, he's not one of your guys that I'm just heavily sought after. Breece Hall is definitely the heavy-weighted here on the other side. When you look at Breece Hall, I mean, he's my running back one in next year's class, and I don't think that's all that close. I mean, he's the top running back, and I don't really see anybody coming fairly close to him, but he's still a Devi asset, right? I mean, when we were all looking at, and I'm gonna crap on myself here for a little bit, when we're looking at a guy like last year, Journey Brown, where he was many guys' top running back in this class, and all of a sudden, he's not even playing football anymore. So I can't weigh a Devi running back that highly to want to make me trade away Tyreek Hill if I'm giving up Tyreek Hill. And then you look at the pick 303, that's Devi depleted. I don't like the term Devi depleted because there's always Devi guys that you could draft. Like, Devi depleted, that term's crap. I don't want to hear it. Like, there's always guys that you could draft that are going to be studs for your roster. So that's taking shots at some of my Devi leagues. If any of those guys are listening, your league is never Devi depleted. Like, don't ever tell me that. But it's still a later round pick. You're not getting the top studs. Like, you're not getting a Jahmyr Gibbs. You're not getting a Tank Bigsby. You're not getting those freshmen that have gone off this year, and you're most likely not getting any of the sophomores or juniors that have really stepped up this year. You're getting a later round flyer for a Devi league. So that package does nothing for me to want to give up a wide receiver one and probably one of the best pure freak athlete, a wide receiver that we've seen in a long time.
I am on the Tyreek Hill side. That is who I was able to acquire. I got,
that's good. I was hoping I wasn't crapping on you.
No, I got a little bit lucky, excuse me, in that he definitely has a strength at wide receiver, both with the guys he has in the NFL and then the guys that he has coming in. I mean, that's where kind of his strength was. And he was very weak at quarterback. So Ryan Tannehill was my third quarterback. I also have Josh Allen and Russell Wilson. And we talked about Russell Wilson first, and I just couldn't find enough value coming back, because I know Russell has his ups and his downs, but typically by the end of the season, he's sitting there at quarterback, you know, 6 to 10, and it's every single year, and you can just count on it every single year. And so while he's 32 years old, I'm fine when he's my second quarterback and my first quarterback's Josh Allen. It's like, okay, I'm good here. I don't like not having the depth, because obviously if one of those guys get hurt, I'm screwed. I got nothing else. But I do have the third overall pick in the rookie draft, and there are, you know, besides Lawrence and Fields, every other quarterback's available. So I could get a quarterback at the 303 to make up for that. But he said that he was willing to move Tyreek Hill, and I'm just like, I don't have any shares of Tyreek Hill, and I'm sick of it. I'm tired of watching this guy look absolutely amazing and knowing that in every league I'm in, when that happens, I have to just hope for the fact that I'm not playing against him, because I know I don't have him in any league. He's one
of the guys that makes me the most scared of going up against. I mean, he's got the most boom potential to go off in any week, and part of that is his speed, part of it's the offense he plays in. But out of any wide receiver in the NFL today, if I'm worried about a wide receiver dropping 50 points on me, it's Tyreek Hill.
Right. So really quick on him, and then we'll get into our national title game review. Back when he was going through his off-the-field issues, I remember this specifically. All of a sudden, my phone goes off, and I get a trade offer in one of my leagues. A guy would offer me Tyreek Hill for a third-round pick. And I'm like, what? And I in the time that it took me to read it, go over to my laptop, and I was going to log in and accept the trade, somebody else accepted it. So he threw it out. He just wanted him off his team, and he threw it out to everybody in the league. And somebody got Tyreek Hill for a third-round rookie pick.
Oh, that's why you have the app downloaded on your phone, man.
Well, I
got to have that app.
It just I hesitated too long, and it's ironically, it's a team that is – my team is really good. I should have won the title this year. I had a bad week 15. Otherwise I would have won it. I was best team in the league. And it's like, man, I can't imagine my roster with Tyreek Hill on it. It would have been amazing. But anyway, that just tells you, when people get desperate on those moves, make your decision quickly. Don't wait, people. Learn from my mistakes. So we know you're disappointed that Ohio State didn't win. I don't think, to be honest, it was any surprise. I mean, Alabama's just so good. And I think the only chance was that the Ohio State defense would come into the game and they would do what they did in the semifinal game and look just really good and just slow them down or shut them down enough to keep up. And clearly Mac Jones and Devonta Smith said, not going to happen. That was an amazing display of all of the Devy prospects and the rookie prospects that we love for Alabama. Like, literally every one of them looked good, except Jaylen Waddle, who I've heard other people debate this. And in my opinion, there is no debate. There's no way that guy should have been playing in this game. Like, he never looked like he was running normally. Like, what? That, and I get that he wanted to play, but so what? Like, dude, you're hurt. Think big. Think long term. I mean, I'm sure he didn't hurt himself more, so that's good. But, man, that first catch, he goes running across the field like, oh, look at him go. And then you watch him run, you're like, wait a minute, he doesn't look right. And then they started showing the highlights of the plays, you know, like his warming up. I'm like, he doesn't look right warming up. I was shocked by the fact that he was playing. I guess I'd love to know, what are your thoughts on Waddle playing, and then where you feel he's at coming into the rookie class?
Man, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, when I was watching him in warm-ups, he was limping during the warm-ups. So I don't know how you realistically convince yourself that, okay, he's okay to play and I need to have him out there. And I don't understand why he was allowed to even play the game in the first place, but why he was allowed to play the game as late into the game, even into a blowout, that he was still in there playing. Like, that, I can't comprehend why the coaches let him stay in that game. I mean, and everybody was all over Twitter talking about it. And, you know, I was listening to the Devy debate this week, and I can't remember who it was, so they got to forgive me for not remembering who brought this point up. But I think it might have been Felix, actually. Somebody here at some point one of the coaches has to be the bigger man. Like, somebody's got to be a grown-up and take this kid out of the game and think
Felix.
About what's better for his NFL future. And I completely agree with that. I mean, you can't – the game was a blowout. The game was out of hand. It's okay, sit down, young man. You've done your part. Thank you for doing what you did for our team. Go get yourself some money in the NFL. I mean, I don't – there's no debate for that for me. I mean, he shouldn't have been playing. There's no reason he should have been out there. And somebody made a really bad decision by having him out there and could have potentially cost him a career in the NFL if things got too out of hand.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think though, if anything, you say, all right, dude, we're going to address you. And at a certain part of the game, you know, likely later when it's out of hand, we will put you in, we'll throw you the ball once on a simple out. At least you can get a catch and that's it. You're not doing anything else because it's just too risky or something like that. I mean, kudos to him. I get it. You want to help your team. You're a team player. You're trying to be gutty. And those are all commendable traits. And I was nervous about him coming into the draft with that injury because I thought it was just a nasty injury. It's like, oh, man, this is really going to impact all of his top – traits that we love about Jaylen Waddle. I mean, he's so shifty and agile and elusive that he can get away with the fact that he's not a big guy. But I was like, man, that injury is going to be huge for him. But then all of a sudden when he's playing, it's like, oh, well, maybe it wasn't that bad. Maybe I wasn't as caught up on where the status of his injury was. And you know, the way I am with injuries is I typically pay more attention to injuries when it impacts lineups because I have to know, oh, is my guy coming back? How bad is it? And because it's college, you don't really know as much. And I'm not setting lineups. There's no C2C leagues that win. So I was a little intrigued that, oh, well, maybe it's not that bad. I got to stop worrying about the injury. But I guess now I still feel a little better that he's even close to being playable. But yeah, it's just not a smart decision.
Here's the flip side of that, though. When you were watching him, I mean, he looked like he might have been running a 4.5 40 on a bum ankle. So I mean that makes me excited to see what he could do healthy. I mean, what is his 40 going to look like? Because we already know how agile and elusive he is. He can catch the ball. He's a great route runner, and he has the ability to every time he touches the ball, he can take it to the house. I mean, that's who Jaylen Waddle is. So if he is that fast with a bum ankle, I'm scared to think how fast he is completely healthy.
Yeah, so as we transition from the national game, and we'll talk about a couple guys later, but get into our wide receivers. Obviously, we've talked about Waddle, but where do you have him in your wide receiver ranks for the 2021 rookies? Where does he sit for you?
He's a guy that started creeping up for me the more I watch his game film. I originally had him around wide receiver 5, wide receiver 6. And now the more I watch him, I mean, you've got your two top guys in Ja'Marr Chase and Devontae Smith. And while people want to debate who the wide receiver one is out of those two guys, I think everybody can agree that those are the two tier one guys in this draft class. It's Ja'Marr Chase and it's Devontae Smith. I love Rondale Moore. I love what he does with the football in his hands. I love his physicality for his size. So he's definitely my wide receiver 3 right now. And then after that, I'm like, I'm starting to slot in Jaylen Waddle into my wide receiver 4 role more and more the more I look at it. I mean, I love his game film. He's a guy that's definitely been a fast riser for me over the last few weeks.
Yeah, I moved him down with the injury, and now I'm starting to move him back up again. Like, okay, I gotta go back and watch his film before the injury and just remind myself how amazing this kid really is. And I'm 45 years old, so I get to refer to these guys as kids. That's just how I am. I'm an old man. You know, the age is catching up to me, but that's just the reality of the situation. The other guy, and you mentioned his name, and he showed up for the biggest stage, Devonta Smith. I mean, well, sure, I'll go for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns, but I don't know what I'm going to do in the second half. Oh, I'm going to get hurt. Doesn't matter. I've done my part. I mean, I don't know what else this guy has to do. And I get that the BMI argument is there and it's got a history, but those are just, you know, it's just what's tended to happen in the past, it doesn't mean that's what's going to happen in the future. And when a kid is that good and he does everything else that well, I got to believe that he's got enough traits that are going to be successful in the NFL, that he's still the top guy. Like you said, I mean, you're tier one. If you've got Chase and Devonta Smith, I can't argue with that. I mean, he's so good.
He would be really good if he was 7 pounds heavier.
7 whole pounds would make all the difference.
Seven whole pounds. Can you believe that's the difference? I'm not going to get too much off on a tangent here, but I know that the reason a lot of people don't want to take Devonta Smith is because the history and the track record for guys his size doesn't pan out well. But we just got done talking about a freak athlete in Tyreek Hill. And I know people don't want to bet on the freakish athlete because that doesn't happen all that often. But in my eyes, Devonta Smith is one of those guys. I mean, you look at what he does. He's out there, his body control, he's making NFL catches on the sideline already. I mean, he runs great routes. He's physical. He can go up and get the ball. He's obviously fast. I mean, that's not being debated. He runs great routes. When I watch him on film, rarely does he not create separation and give his quarterback an open receiver to throw the ball to. And in my experience scouting wide receivers, that's a rare trait that translates really well to the NFL. So I don't give a crap, excuse my language, about his BMI. Like, that doesn't matter to me. I think he's going to be a freak athlete. I don't understand how, as an Ohio State fan, you leave him as open as he was. And part of that might have been his separation. But, I mean, seventh Wood Banks and, I'm blanking on the Sean Wade. Was blanking on the other guy, Sean Wade. When you got those two guys, well, I mean, they were coming out, they said, we want Devonta Smith. And turns out they didn't really want Devonta Smith. I don't understand how you let him get as open as he did in that game and let him just run free with the ball. I mean, There were several plays where there was nobody within 10 yards of him.
Right.
And I'm not entirely sure how that happens.
And it was on those plays where he'd be behind the line of scrimmage when he caught the ball, and they're still not within 10 yards. I'm like, okay, guys, you're not even trying. Like, this isn't a knock on the defensive backs. It's whatever scheme you guys came up with was terrible, because he catches the ball and he's got all this space to run before he's even, you know, threatened. And he doesn't even need that much space. It's like, if he catches it on the run where he doesn't have to break stride, I mean, he just accelerates so quickly and it's so fluid that all of a sudden he's around the corner and gone before you even realize what's going on. And it was like every single play. It's like Alabama kept running that play because it kept working. I mean, it's like, well, if they're not going to stop it, we're just going to keep doing the same thing.
It was one of those situations where we're going to keep running the same play until you guys figure out how to stop it, and we never did.
Yeah, and to Mac Jones's credit, you know, because people say, oh, yeah, he checks down all the time. It's like, he does, and that's a concern. It's like, you know, and I, you know, Kane Fasel's got a concern about, well, he never faces pressure. Totally legit, so that's going to be different in the NFL, and he's going to have to learn how to adjust to that. But the one thing I do like is that even on those short passes, he's super accurate. Like, it's right in stride. It's exactly where the running back or the wide receiver needs to catch the ball in order to not break stride. So you're maximizing the potential yards after the catch. You know, if you throw it slightly behind him where he has to slow down or he has to turn, it throws off the whole rhythm for the runner. And it's not as fluid. And that's how you end up losing more yards than you could have gotten, because the guy has to adjust to a poor throw, you know, if it's super high or super low, whatever. Every one of them seemed to be right on target. And, you know, clearly Jones was in a great rhythm and he wasn't getting disrupted in that rhythm. I think the one time he got hit as he was throwing the ball was the one where he kind of lobbed it up on the left side. And there was our guy, you know, our Najee Harris, you know, catching it kind of awkwardly, because it wasn't the greatest throw because it was so high up. But again, he had the space and then he did the rest and brought it in the end zone. It was, you know, Najee doing Najee things. And it's why he's my RB1. I love the guy. But
speaking of Najee doing Najee things, did you see that one clip that Shaq tweeted out where, I mean, it was an obvious targeting call and Najee just runs through the targeting. Like, come on, dude, like bulk up a little bit before you come hit me like that.
Yeah, there was one. Yeah, the guy came up as he was catching the ball, and he got he got just hammered, and he basically just stood there. And then he kept trying to go forward, and then other guys came and tackled him or something. It was, the guy is just he's a truck, but he's so fluid. I love Harris, but I know we're focusing on wide receivers today, but yeah, he's my RB1. We kind of covered the Alabama side. Getting into Ohio State, other than the injury to Sermon, I didn't think anything happened in the game that made me change my opinion on players. I still like Justin Fields as the QB2. I still am, well, I've probably moved Chris Olave up the board as far as I can move him now, but I have him probably higher than a lot of people because he is my wide receiver, and I'm just doing a little count here. I've got him sixth in this class. So the sixth wide receiver. So there are guys that have, Terrace Marshall ahead of him, Elijah Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and we'll get into these rankings. But I love Chris Olave. He is such a good route runner. He's got great hands. He's smooth. He can create enough separation. He just feels like one of those guys where his skills are gonna move over to the NFL, and he's gonna be good. He might not be, a top five wide receiver, but I think his floor is higher. I think he's gonna be successful no matter where he goes.
I love Chris Olave. I mean, there's one thing that I look for in my wide receivers, and it's your ability to create separation. And he might be one of the best pure route runners in this entire draft class, and that's going to translate really well to the next level. What I like most about him is the price that you have to pay to get him. I mean, I'm looking at some recent mock drafts I've done or I've been a part of, and he's gone, in the last four mock drafts that I've seen, he's gone 208, 210, 210, and 211. And when you're looking at the back end of the second round, his floor alone, he might sneak into top of the second, late first for me by the time it's all said and done based on landing spot. But when you don't have to spend but a late second round draft capital, possibly early third in the right league, I mean, I'm smashing that draft pick all day because he runs routes well. He creates separation. I mean, the way he breaks off his routes to create 3 yards, 3, 4, or 5 yards at separation, doing this against top-level cornerbacks in college football. I mean, I love that. I think he's going to excel at the next level for me, and I love the price point that you're able to get him at.
This leads to something I heard. I think it was the Rookie Fever podcast. You got Finero and Swags, and they were talking about lessons learned. In fact, I think it was like their New Year's resolutions, but to fantasy football. And they said something that really resonated with me, and that's, I'm done taking these lower tier running backs in the second round of my rookie drafts that have just a very limited chance of being the guy. I mean, they need something really special to happen. Instead, I'm going to take these top wide receivers that almost always get a chance because they were all day two picks, and there's just more depth at wide receiver. So, I think about some of the drafts I was in. Like, yeah, I did a lot of that too. Where you're taking a chance on Zach Moss, or you're taking a chance on AJ Dillon, and sure, Dillon might actually work out. He had one good game, and he might end up being a larger share next year in Green Bay, depending on what they do with Aaron Jones. But think about the wide receivers that went in round two that you could have had. I mean, Brandon Ayuk stands out. For sure is one. And I think what you're talking about, Olave could be that guy. Like, he could be the guy you get in the middle of your second round, pretty much all over the place that no one else is taking. And he's going to end up being really good. So that's where I'm at with him. Let's get into the top, kind of the top of the guys that weren't in the national championship game. And, the first one that I want to talk about, out of sight, out of mind, because he hasn't played, but let's not forget his 2019 campaign. Ja'Marr Chase, LSU, 84 catches, 1,780 yards, and 20 touchdowns. 2-0. The 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it, with Justin Jefferson, of course, who rookie, for sure the best wide receiver, but in my opinion, offensive rookie of the year. Little bias there for my Vikings, but Ja'Marr Chase for me. Yeah, you mentioned earlier you've got him up there with Devonta Smith on tier one. I was watching more of his film today just to kind of reacquaint myself. This guy can do it all. I mean, he can make a ton of contested catches. He gets separation. He's got great hands. He gets open. He can get you yards after the catch. I love Ja'Marr Chase. I forgot just how good he really was. And I don't think a year off's gonna matter. I think he's gonna be one of the top wide receivers taken.
He's a great wide receiver, Skip, but you're wrong on one aspect, and I'm gonna tell you why. The more I watch Ja'Marr Chase, and this is gonna be a little controversial, he catches the ball well. When he gets the ball in open space, he's explosive and he can take the ball to the house. He has strong hands. He runs decent routes. But there's one thing that I can't unsee when I watch Ja'Marr Chase, and it's the reason he's my wide receiver two and Devonta Smith is my wide receiver one. And it is his ability to create separation. When I watch him en route, he is not a physical wide receiver. He doesn't fight through contact well at the line of scrimmage. He doesn't fight through contact well en route. I mean, every time I'm watching him catch the ball, he's got somebody pretty close to him. I don't see that when I watch Devonta Smith. When I watch Devonta Smith catch the ball, a lot of times he's created enough separation where no one's going to get him. And while I love Ja'Marr Chase, I've already said it on this pod, he's a tier one wide receiver for me. So don't hear me say that I hate Ja'Marr Chase, because that's not the case. I love Ja'Marr Chase, but he's my wide receiver too. He's proven to me, the more I watch his all 22 film, he's got some real issues for me in fighting through contact and route. And while that might not be a huge problem in the NFL, I still think he's going to excel at the NFL. It's not a reason for me to put him above Devonta Smith.
Okay, so that's not a terrible thing. I mean, when you're saying you're knocking a guy and you knock him all the way down to two, that's not a huge – I think there's an argument there. I mean, that's fair. I mean, I did notice that. I mean, if one of your greatest strengths is you're catching a lot of contested throws – you could argue that that's happening for one of two reasons. Either one, the quarterback's throwing the ball poorly and you have to adjust to a poorly thrown ball. That wasn't usually the case with Joe Burrow, you know, last year. Or two, you're not getting open enough to where the quarterback doesn't have any choice but to throw you the ball when he knows it's going to be a contested situation. I think he will prove that he can create enough to be viable in the NFL, but that is a fair take, because that can be more landing spot dependent, right? I mean, if he goes to a situation where the quarterback has no problem throwing to a guy that's a little more covered and just, you know, throwing it open, throwing the receiver open or trusting the receiver to make a contested catch, then he'll be fine. But there are quarterbacks that don't like to do that. Justin Fields, that's a common knock on him, is that he needs to see the guy open before he'll throw the ball. Whereas, you know, some quarterbacks are like, no, I'll throw it to a spot and he can go and get it because I know that the other guy won't be able to get it. And so I think that's a good point. It's a good observation. So something to watch with him in that, can he improve on those? I think there's the little subtleties of route running or the things you can do to get more open when you're not, you know, elite as far as speed or agility or strength. So that's
you, you made an interesting point there. And when I'm looking at the top teams that are picking this draft, and I think that's what you need to look at, because there's a real possibility he goes top 10 in this NFL draft. If he goes to a team like the Falcons, I know they're looking for a quarterback, but if they for some reason draft him, I think that's a great fit. If he goes to the Bengals and pairs him back up with Joe Burrow, that's a great fit. I even like him going to possibly the Lions if Matt Stafford stays there and his gunslinger mentality. But if he goes to somebody like, for example, the Dolphins, where, I mean, I still don't want to knock Tua. Tua's not a guy that I'm ready to sell and write off just yet. But if he goes to a situation like that, That's not a landing spot that I love. So I think landing spot could be a huge thing here.
It's funny you gave that for example team, because I was thinking of the Dolphins Tua. Just going to let that one sink in there. That was good. This is where I find like the cheering laughter, you know, the the clip, and I'll just put it into that dead space for us.
Hold on, let me look for my boo button real quick.
Yeah, no doubt. That'd be great to have a button bar. You could just insert stuff. I should find some of that stuff. Anyway, moving on. We talked about the Alabama guys. So let's get into a couple of Big Ten fellas. We've got Rondale Moore from Purdue, who you mentioned earlier, and then Rashad Bateman of my Gophers. I have both these guys in my top five, and I love them both. As I continue to watch film of both of them, I keep seeing the traits that made me love them in the first place. Rondale Moore, I think, is interesting because, again, he's shorter, but he is way, way more physical than his stature would lead you to believe. And I'm trying to think of the player. Oh, yeah. So it was Kadarius Toney of Florida. I heard somebody compare him to Percy Harvin. And I thought, well, he might have some of the agility and the speed. And, yeah, they played at the same college. But Percy Harvin was way stronger and more physical of a wide receiver than people thought he was. Like, when you know, I had the benefit of watching him in his entire, you know, what is he, 3 or 4 year career with the Vikings. And when he caught the ball, he could literally run through people. He was that strong. I mean, it was freakish to watch. It's like, how is this guy this strong? He's not that big. That's who I think of with Rondale Moore. And I don't want to do the comp thing. And I almost want to say, and I could be getting this wrong, I almost want to say that might have been a similar comp that Ray Garvin made. And if I'm wrong, I'm sorry. You know, people can, you know, don't yell at me if I got this one wrong. But I guess that's what I see in Rondale Moore, is a lot of those traits where I can go deep, but I can catch the short underneath stuff. But when I do catch the ball, it's what I do after that that's going to make all the difference. And in the same respect with like 100% Jalen Waddle, when these guys get their hands on the ball, it is lights out. I mean, they are so dynamic with it. These are the short, fast, agile guys that should be going in the first round of the NFL draft. Not some of the guys that have gone. Henry Ruggs. No, he's fast, but he doesn't have those other physical traits that these two guys have, in my opinion. So that's why I love Rondale Moore and Jalen Waddle. But then, you know, to get to Bateman, before I end my, you know, my long filibuster here, I see that Bateman seems to do everything well. Like, he's got the speed to beat you deep. He can make absolute, you know, circus great one-handed catches. He's got awesome concentration. He can make contested catches, but you can create separation. He runs different routes. I think he's a really complete player. I mean, I'm not saying he's the number one or two, but he's up there where, you know, if he goes at the end of the first round, I'm not going to be surprised. Early second, definitely not surprised. And I think he's slipping on people's lists. Like, he's going to the end of the first round I'm doing a rookie mock one quarterback, and I got him at the 111. So not a super flex. So there was only one quarterback gone, and that I was thrilled. I was like, wow, thanks, guys. So, you know, kind of lump those three in there. What do you think of those three guys?
Yeah, I love Rondale Moore. I like how you made the Percy Harvin comp, because I can see that for sure. I mean, he's such a strong guy. Anytime, you know, a wide receiver his size is squatting 600 pounds, like, I'm going to take notice. You know, guys his size shouldn't be able to do that. He's going to be a PPR monster. I mean, realistically, in his first few years, I can see him catching over 100 footballs. I mean, I don't think that's out of the question for him. And he's a guy that every time he touches the ball, he's just, he's electric. So he's going to be your PPR monster for you. I love Rashad Bateman. I think quarterback play and Tanner Morgan has limited his potential a whole lot. I mean, that offense, I mean, you watched him every Saturday. I mean, that offense was just sputtering. I mean, it was very much a first and second down, we're going to hand the ball off to Ibrahim. Third down, we're going to throw a jump ball up to Rashad Bateman. And that was the game plan every single week. And that just didn't work. And I think that dinged him. He's fallen in a lot of people's drafts. I mean, I'm looking at some of my mock drafts now. He's gone 11, 8, and 11 in the last three mock drafts that I've done. So you're into the first round. And I think that's a steal for a championship squad. You're just missed out on the championship, and you can add a guy like Rashad Bateman to your roster. I mean, sign me up for that all day. I think a perfect landing spot, and you might be able to speak on this, I think a perfect landing spot with him would be the Green Bay Packers, pairing him up with Aaron Rodgers opposite Davante Adams. I mean, a spot where he's not your wide receiver one. He doesn't have to take over a roster, but he's a solid wide receiver two for years.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I gotta take off my Viking helmet and put on my fantasy football analyst, you know, hat and say, okay, sure. Yeah. A second wide receiver in Green Bay sounds like a really good landing spot. I'm not entirely sure that that's the case with how much that Rodgers and Adams has that connection. Cause I feel like we've been talking about a second wide receiver in Green Bay for so long. And then there's always an alpha and then just a bunch of guys that he spreads it around to, and none of them become really fantasy relevant. Like this year, Robert Tonyan did as a tight end, but there hasn't been a wide receiver. And sure, if they had a second one that was really good, that might change. I just, yeah, you know, but landing spot, you know, regardless, right? I think we see eye to eye on Bateman's traits and abilities along with Moore and Waddle. I think after this is where you start getting into the guys that you're really getting down into those next tiers where, you know, who do you like best and where does draft capital and landing spot kind of delineate which player you should, you know, focus on. And people are going to have their guys, and so they're going to take them no matter what, and that's fine. You know, you like a guy, go for it. If you're in a lot of leagues and you end up with the same guy in a lot of leagues, that's okay, because if you are right and he hits, you're going to love it. So I say do that. Don't worry about, you know, how many leagues you're in and who you got and what. But kind of that next spot down, you've got Terrace Marshall, LSU. I think he absolutely capitalized on Ja'Marr Chase leaving, and he picked up the reins and just like, okay, hey guys, I know you didn't talk about me a lot last year with those two studs, but I'm a good wide receiver as well. Elijah Moore, Ole Miss, and Amon-Ra St. Brown at USC. I'll let you give your opinion on kind of these next level guys. Where do you feel these guys are at?
They're all day two guys for me. I think they can easily see some day two draft capital. I think Marshall could be a guy that even slips in to round one. I mean, when you look at him, yes, he was on a team where, you know, you had probably the most prolific offense in all of college football. He had two studs in front of him in Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, but he still shined. I mean, a lot of people are still forgetting that Terrace Marshall was, I think, a five-star recruit when he came into college. So, I mean, he still was a great recruit in his own aspect, and that the offense opening up, you know, when once Ja'Marr Chase opted out and once Justin Jefferson left, I mean, he feasted on this offense. And I think, you know, the offense as a whole was down, but Terrace Marshall played himself into possibly round one draft capital. And is a guy that early in your second rounds could be a championship winning guy on your roster, in my opinion. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown as well. He's another guy where I talked about how I like my guys. The most important trait that I scout in a wide receiver is the ability to create separation, run good routes, and the ability to get open. Chris Olave does that really well. Amon-Ra St. Brown is another guy that does that exceptionally. He has strong hands and great body control. He's another guy that you're getting in your early to mid second round. They could be one of those guys that just explodes next season, a la Justin Jefferson. I mean, when I'm looking at some of my rosters, for example, we hit on it early in the podcast, you know, when we had our New Year's resolutions to stop drafting these middle of the road running backs instead of your top-notch wide receivers. I'm thinking of one draft I had last year where Keyshawn Vaughn went at 202 and Justin Jefferson went at 203. And which prospect would you rather have now? I mean, which dynasty asset do you want on a roster now? It's 100% Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that Keyshawn Vaughn was going to do more. And I'm not saying that he's dead and buried, but right, there's no comparison there. I mean, Justin Jefferson is obviously the asset you want. You know, I loved your Amon-Ra St. Brown comparison to Chris Olave. They are very similar type wide receivers. And those are the kind of guys that I think can excel in the NFL. I like Amon-Ra St. Brown too. He's also more of an unknown because he plays in the Pac-12, and you know, just their games are on layer. People just don't watch that football as much. So I think sometimes that opens up an opportunity to get those guys a little bit later, unless they're so highly touted that you can, that, you know, people just aren't paying enough attention to them. They don't get the publicity and the discussion on Twitter. So, yep, I like both those guys, and I agree on Marshall. I mean, he absolutely played himself into a late day one or day two, you know, second round pick, and he's going to be, you know, we're already, you know, 8-9 deep in our wide receiver discussion here. So yeah, all of these guys are going to be, you know, mid to late first round rookie picks, second round rookie picks. I mean, and there's more guys that we like on the list. I mean, Elijah Moore is one of those guys that was a high riser. And I think, you know, I put him up there with a guy like Tutu Atwell, where, you know, they've got speed and they can make so many dynamic plays that you just got to, you know, how, you know, is it going to be translatable to the NFL? Because size is a concern, you know, especially, you know, Tutu is, you know, you talk about weight. I mean, he's a little guy, but he's also maybe the fastest guy. I mean, he is freakishly fast. So, yeah, I don't know. I think, and, you know, these guys could slip late second round, third round in rookie drafts. I don't know where they're going to go in the NFL draft. You know, that's all depends on if one team likes a guy, that's all it takes. But, you know, who are some other guys you want to talk about?
A lot of that too, because just hit on that point, comes to scheme too. I mean, when you get to these guys, it's what wide receiver fits a coach's scheme and the offense that they want to run. And landing spot could shuffle a lot of these guys around. I mean, you look at a guy like Tamorian Terry, for example, where he's got the size and speed and just the freakishness to him, but he's also got some drop issues. I mean, I think he's the definition of a boom or bust prospect for me. He could either be your Hakeem Butler wide receiver, or he could be a Randy Moss type speed size freak. And I mean, it's one of those boom or bust things where, I mean, landing spot's going to really dictate a guy like that. Skip, I mentioned to you, we were texting in our group chat today, and I told you there was a guy that I was really interested in. And, you know, I see on this list that you have Amari Rodgers from Clemson. Well, there's one Clemson wide receiver that I want to talk about, and his name is not Amari Rodgers, and it is Cornell Powell. The more I watch his film, man, he jumps out to me. I mean, this kid is dynamic. You talk about contested catches. This dude is physical at the catch point. He runs great routes. He has the speed to get behind defensive backs, and he has just incredibly strong hands. I mean, he's a guy that the more I watch his film, I'm falling more and more in love the more I watch him. And he's a guy that, I mean, I don't think he's going to go in the first or second round for sure in any of your rookie drafts. I mean, he's definitely a third or fourth round type player. And at that, you know, when you're looking at that, you're throwing darts at that point at prospects that you hope will get an opportunity and who you hope will stick. Powell is one of those guys that if I'm throwing a dart in the later round of my rookie drafts, I'm throwing the dart at him in every single rookie drafts I'm in, because I love his game film. I love his physicality and his speed. And I love what he does on the football field. I mean, when you watched later Clemson games, he was the wide receiver that was jumping out of these Clemson games. It wasn't Amari Rodgers. It was Cornell Powell. So I love what he does, and this is why you listen to the Devy Happy Hour. If you're listening, I'm going to provide you names like this that not a lot of guys are talking about, but it's definitely somebody that you need to have on your radar.
Yeah, I like that you brought him up, and I think it made me think about just kind of overall, like, strategy when you're ranking players getting ready for your rookie draft. You know, you got to remember draft capital, and a guy that I, you know, this is learn from your mistakes time, right? A guy that I didn't have highly ranked going into last year's rookie draft, and he got the draft capital. He got a team that is notorious for putting out good wide receiver production, and that's Chase Claypool. And I allowed my pre-draft rankings on this kid to ignore all the signs that were there that, hey, wait a minute, maybe he's actually better than I thought, and I shouldn't fade him in all my drafts. I should take a dart on him because he was going so late because it was such a deep class. Laviska Shenault is another guy, right? I mean, his value should absolutely be increasing right now, because they're going to have Trevor Lawrence. And if you are in a league, you know, and this goes too with DJ Chark, try to go get him now and see if you can get him cheap, because their value is going to go up when they start getting ball from Trevor Lawrence, and then you can trade them later for profit, or you can reap the benefits. But getting back to Claypool, he's one of those guys that I should have paid more attention to where he went. You talked about other players that, if a guy that you really like Torian Terry, I was going to bring him up too. I love Torian Terry, and I have no idea where he's going to go in the draft. If he falls like Butler did to round six, I need to factor that in and say, okay, I'm not touching this kid until late third round of rookie drafts, because it's just not likely that he's going to get the opportunity to do anything. I mean, he's going to sit on their bench, whichever team drafts him, and basically do nothing for the majority of the season, unless there's just a crap ton of injuries, and then in which case, he might get more opportunity, but you can't predict that. Whereas a guy that maybe you don't like as much, let's just say Seth Williams from Auburn. Good wide receiver. I personally like Torian Terry better. I think he's got a higher ceiling. But if Seth Williams goes at the end of the third round and Torian Terry falls all the way to the end of the fifth, I need to remember that, because the odds are that Seth Williams, whatever team drafts him, is going to give him the opportunity before Terry gets his. So that's something you got to remember. I mean, the late round studs, of course they happen. The undrafted guy will come out of nowhere. James Robinson, Stephon Diggs, the fifth round pick. But those are the exceptions. They're just not the rules. I mean, usually the guys are higher drafted, or at least the higher drafted guys gets the opportunity more. So, I mentioned, Williams, Dyami Brown's another one that's going to be, I think, a third round rookie pick. I don't know where he's going to fall in the NFL draft. My guess is he's a day three, round four or five. He might get up to there. Tutu Atwell, I mentioned earlier, he's super fast. Kadarius Toney, I think both those guys are going to fall. But the last one I wanted to bring up was Sage Surratt, Wake Forest. He took the year off, and he's one of those just kind of solid wide receivers. I mean, very reliable. Again, great hands, makes contested catches. It'll be interesting to see where he gets drafted, because he could be a guy that everyone's forgotten about. But if he gets drafted again, late round three, early round four, don't forget about Surratt. He's not bad. So he put up some really good numbers, and obviously a questionable offense at Wake. So he was kind of the last guy I wanted to mention. Are there any other guys, or are we good at wide receiver?
Yeah, you hit on Sage Surratt, and that's definitely a case of what have you done for me lately, for sure, when you look at a guy like Sage Surratt. Because, I mean, you hit all the things that he does well. He's a great route runner. He has solid hands. He's not a guy that's going to go out and just wow you with his athletic ability, but he's just one of those just solid wide receivers. And when you look at him last year, he set out this year. He opted out because of COVID and just preparing for the NFL draft. There's a reason that Jamie Newman was able to declare for the NFL draft this year, and it wasn't Jamie Newman's prowess as a quarterback. It was what Sage Surratt did on the football field, and I think a lot of us are forgetting that. So Sage Surratt, just based on his, watch to see what round capital he gets, what draft capital, what team he goes to. He could be an interesting one at the end of your rookie drafts.
I like how you mentioned Jamie Newman, because next week we're going to talk about the rookie class for quarterbacks. So excellent transition there, Mr. Jackson. That's why you're the co-host with the most, buddy.
That's why they pay me the big money.
Absolutely. You're earning your check, in spades. Why don't you tell everybody, what your final thoughts are and where they can find you on Twitter and your work with Dynasty Nerds.
So you guys have seen how deep this wide receiver class is. If there's one piece of information or advice that I can give you guys, it's stock up on 2021 seconds for your rookie drafts, because those things are going to be so stupid valuable by the time rookie drafts come along. I mean, we're looking at guys 14 wide receivers deep that could be interesting names. And this rookie draft is going into round three of just guys that I love. So definitely get your hand on as many seconds as you can get. You guys can find me on Twitter at @DHH_Matt. I also do my rankings and writing over at Dynasty Nerds. I'm looking at producing an article, talk about transition skip, an article right now comparing this year's rookie wide receiver class to the last 2 years' rookie wide receivers class, and just comparing where these guys should go if you had an interclass draft. So keep an eye on that coming out. That should be a fun one to write. I've also got some prospect profiles coming out on Kenneth Gainwell and Jalen Waddle. So look out for those two on Dynasty Nerds.
That'll be a great article because there have been some absolute stud wide receivers in these last two draft classes. So it'll be really interesting to see where you slot the new class in there. I love it. I love the idea. You know, and you talked about gathering second round picks. I'm going to say too, don't give away your early thirds. You know, if you talk about wide receivers being 14 deep and you talk about quarterbacks being six deep in a super flex, you're up to 20 guys right there. And we haven't even talked about tight ends yet. We know there's at least the three big ones. So there's 23 guys. You almost got a full two rounds of players, and then there's running backs. And it's a top-heavy running back class. We talked about that, but there's a lot of depth kind of in the middle of running back. Now, you're into the middle of the third round now of players that are all good prospects. And, you know, obviously the order is going to be dependent on draft stock, but don't just assume that, you know, your third-round picks aren't valuable, because I think this year they might be more valuable, definitely more than they will be next year. I mean, next year, I think the third round is going to be garbage, but this year, man, I like it. So very interesting there. Of course, for Shaq, he's at Dynasty Tools on Twitter, film room editor, Dynasty Nerds, co-host of the Dynasty Tools podcast when he's available, and hope that he can get him back when he's available. And we are part of the Dynasty Happy Hour team of podcasts. Dynasty Happy Hour featuring Tim Keller, Doug Eddy, and Tyler Gunther, recording every Sunday night. They're doing a nice series on rankings by position. So Dynasty rankings, those are going really well. And then the DHH Contractor is back, hosted by Randy, a.k.a. Memphis. So he's out there. Reach out to him on Twitter, which is on the internet, of course. Get out to him. Good show. I love how he helps people build their Dynasty roster. He's really cool. And finally, my name is Skip Newton, at SkipNewton31. I'm also covering the ACC for the NFLDraftBible.com. We've really got you covered for all your draft needs. Devy, Dynasty, just the NFL draft in general. It's the whole, you know, offense, defensive players, every player, every position. There's going to be the full gamut up there. Big social media announcement coming soon that we will be the official provider for all draft info for Sports Illustrated. So really excited to be a part of that. Could not be more thrilled. And just want to say big thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening. I appreciate all of you. If you got any, you know, feedback for us, we'd love to hear it. You know, stuff that you want to hear, ideas, traits to review, you know, absolutely send them our way. Our DMs are open on Twitter. So, you know, feel free to reach out and we'll cover whatever you want. And we're going to continue and finish up with the rookie class. You know, next week quarterbacks, we'll do some tight ends, and then we'll start getting into the deep Devy stuff. We're going to go through the conference teams and get into like vacated targets and who are the players you should be watching for, both guys coming back. Hopefully we have a better understanding of everyone who's gone pro and who's sticking around. And then the upcoming rookie class, what incoming freshmen are we liking? Because the National Signing Day has happened, so we'll know more about that. And that's going to get us into spring because it's coming around soon. We're already mid-January, and then maybe we'll get spring practices. Who knows? But for Matt, for Shaq, this is Skip signing off. Everyone have a wonderful weekend and be a good human.